Listeners, first, thank you so much for tuning in. Your time and attention are precious, and I feel privileged to have a moment with you. You are listening to the podcast Beholden with me, your host, Allison of Ignite Wellbeing. Listener discretion is advised as the content varies and may at times be best for mature audiences. If you are a younger person, please listen with a trusted adult. Beholden is a podcast in which I host an amalgam of folks to discuss their lives, their dreams, their hopes, their challenges. Listening to one another with attention and curiosity can disarm aggression and othering by helping us remember we have a shared humanity. We are entangled. We are beholden to one another. Creating community is a form of poetry and prayer for me. Thank you for doing this work with me and with those that I interview. Let us pray and let us create.
All right. Well, thank you, Beverly, for joining me for the podcast recording today. And I want to talk a little bit about your identity. And I'm not going to introduce you. I'd rather you introduce yourself and utilize the pronouns and identity markers that you feel most comfortable. So, Beverly, why don't you get started by telling us how you identify and how you define those identities?
Yeah, sure. I'm Beverly. I use she, her pronouns. I am a woman of trans experience. I'm also pansexual and demisexual. I pretty much follow the book definitions of those. But I did read a really interesting article where they described cisgendered people as people believe like an alternate definition of cisgender being believing in society's gender stereotypes and transgendered not believing or living by those stereotypes, which I thought was interesting. I didn't completely agree with it, but it's good to think about these things.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's a commonly stated identity the way that you say it, a woman of trans experience. I like that.
Yeah, no, I really love that. I did not make that up. I found that from somebody else. And because I am a woman and I just happen to have trans experience. And so am I a cis woman? I am not a cis woman, not at all. I don't have a cis woman's experience. A cis woman doesn't have a trans woman's experience.
And as a woman of trans experience, have you felt marginalized because of your identities?
Oh, absolutely. Ever since Trump got elected, I mean, the marginalization has just shot through the roof of basically trying to be just pushed to the side outside of society and made invisible and deleting all references to trans people. That's pretty bad. Before that, absolutely. I also, but not nearly to that extreme. When I first started transitioning, and I was obviously transitioning, it was a pretty difficult time for me. And I would get all kinds of looks and people would move away from me or it just kind of like stare and shake their heads and things like that. I mean, these things weren't like up in my face and things like that. And I think being in Illinois is a little bit better than being in some of the redder states. So in that way, I felt like kind of shunned that way. Now I don't get that so much, very much anymore. I do get some strange looks, but now I have to kind of interpret those looks, because I'm not sure what they mean anymore, because I don't know if they're clocking me as trans or if it's a guy thinks I'm good looking. I don't know. So those are a little bit more difficult to explain. I did have a couple bad experiences. I had a friend of 43 years who didn't want me around his like 14-year-old daughter, which was, I felt very marginalized, and that ended that friendship. So yes, definitely feeling marginalized.
Yeah, and if we can stay with that for just a moment, because I think as an individual listening to you and also your friend, I can anticipate what that must feel like to be stared at and the meaning behind that. However, that's a projection and that's my own personal bias. So could you elaborate for listeners that aren't familiar with perhaps you or I and what that feels like to be stared at, what that feels like to, I think you used the word ostracized. I didn't write it down. I'm sorry. So, you know, when somebody is staring at you and you're having to interpret what that means, how does that feel in your body? And what is the meaning that you give that?
Well, the first thing you feel is uneasiness. But one skill that this is my theory, I don't know if this is a fact, but I believe that all trans people develop this skill of reading other people's intentions, getting very good at that, because a lot of times you do get these looks and then you have to interpret, is this a dangerous or is this uncomfortable or is this something in between or something like that? Let's say I get misgendered in public. Was that intentional misgendering or was that just a mistake of misgendering? And reading intentions for me has been a valuable tool to learn, which I had to get there.
Well, thank you for elaborating on that a little bit and just to be more helpful, I think, for the listener too, right? In terms of where they may be coming from and understanding how that lands with you and the emotional burden that places on you too. And
yeah,
the burden in terms of
having to figure that out. And it's anxiety producing because you do get that danger or it's no big deal. It's like, it could be this, it could be that. And so you kind of have to err on the side of danger, but you know, it definitely is anxiety producing.
So you've lost friends over this. It sounds like you've felt marginalized in terms of just even your experiences in public and being out and about and the sense of unease or anxiety. Is there anything else you care to share around how you felt marginalized?
Luckily, I transitioned after I retired, so I didn't have to deal with a workplace environment. I didn't have to keep a job or get a job. Where I understand it's just, and I have many friends who, you know, have had terrible experiences that, but I haven't faced those situations personally. So I've been lucky in that regard, and that I haven't needed to assimilate into like certain situations where, you know, like going to school or going to work, you absolutely have to, you know, have to figure out how that's going to work. And I just haven't had to face that. So I'm a little bit lucky there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, I want to pivot a little bit away from marginalizations because I feel like a lot of the conversations around trans identity, yes, it's important. It's incredibly important because it's so harmful in terms of the marginalizations experienced. But I want to maybe expand on how these conversations are happening. And so, you know, understanding that, you are often marginalized and those challenges that you face, but what else or what beyond that do you wish people understood about your experience as a trans person, your experience as a trans woman?
I would say that, and I think this is going to encompass many trans people, but I do not speak for all trans people. I don't even pretend to, but for me, it's like, I'm not a threat. I'm not interested in converting anybody. I don't want to trans any kids. I don't want to get in, you know, I don't want to tell other people how they should live. You know, I would hope that could be reciprocated in my direction. I would just like to be able to live my life, you know, without anybody feeling threatened by me or, you know, and things like that. I think that's the biggest issue there. In that, I mean, all of my friends, that's not an issue, but strangers and certainly interactions on the internet can be definitely a little bit challenging.
Yeah, and what is your understanding of people's assumptions around you being a threat? You living that trans experience, why do you think they find you threatening?
I think so many right-wing talking points have hammered it into their listeners over and over and over again, and that this is not many people's original ideas, but now they've come to incorporate that those ideas into their own ideas. This actually happened with my mom, who would never say these things on her own, but is a Fox News listener. And when I was coming out to her, and I'd had several dinners and lunches with her, and you know, trying to explain things, and then you know, then she came out with, "Oh, you're going to mutilate your genitals," and it's like what? That's like, that doesn't sound like you. And then she said, "Oh, trans people do terrible things to young people." I'm like, "Oh my!" And like I just kind of gave up there, just because it's like that those were not original thoughts by her, and they were definitely talking points that have just been repeated and repeated and repeated to our detriment and to our, you know, to exclude us, an attempt to exclude us from society. And honestly, if those kind of messages weren't being so repetitiously repeated, that doesn't make sense, but anyway, I think things would be a lot better.
Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing that a little bit more, because I wasn't sure what, you know, I think everybody's lived experience is going to be different. Everybody's understanding of how they're perceived is going to be different, and what your experience has been in regards to, you know, living into this idea that you are somehow a threat and what that means to you and your understanding of that. So thank you for sharing a little bit more. And it sounds almost as if it's a lack of media literacy in terms of people's and the information that they're getting from media, and the falsification of that information too. So thank you just for speaking to me.
I would definitely agree with that. And it's a little bit more than falsification. I mean, it's propaganda at this point, because it's risen to such a level.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And, you know, I'd like you to maybe, we'll continue to pivot a little bit. So we talked about marginalizations, what we wish people knew about your identity, and now thinking about how you are like other people. So we're talking a lot about differences, but how are you like other people? Let's humanize, let's empathize. How are you like other people?
In almost every single way, I'm like other people. My transness, it might just define me, but that is not my only quality. And so many people will judge, you know, who don't know me. It's like, oh, that's a trans person. Oh, okay. Well, and then they stop thinking about anything like that. You know, it's like, you know, I like to watch movies, and I like to go to plays, and I like to sing, and I like to act, and interact with people, and go to the park. I mean, in just about every single way that you can imagine, other than being trans, I'm identical to other people. I mean, it's just one facet of my being that I'm not going to apologize for it, but it doesn't completely define me. It shapes my existence and my identity, but that's just one flavor amongst a host of flavors.
Yeah, and if you don't mind me adding my own, I think, information around you as a person, since you and I are friends, but you're also a partner, mm-hmm. you're a grandparent, you're mm-hmm. a parent, you're a community member, you know, are friends to so many people, an activist, and you work as well. So you're mm-hmm. a provider, a service provider to individuals too. So you have so many facets of your identity that you aren't quote unquote just a trans person. So thank you to speak to that. And I don't know if you've got any additional thoughts on that before we.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, because when I work with my clients, a lot of times we get in talking and we're just talking back and forth. And I mean, I can just forget that I'm trans, and it just doesn't matter, because we're talking about, you know, whatever, you know, the weather or things like that. And then all of a sudden a question will come up about my experiences, and it's like, oh, okay, we're back to the trans questions again. Okay. So it can be nice when it doesn't have to be on the forefront of everybody's mind, but I don't mind the other questions either.
Yeah, and so even just relatedly, you know, you are a whole person. You are not, quote unquote, as I said, just a trans individual. You have hopes and dreams for your life, you know, and in general for community, but I want to start with your life. What are some hopes and dreams? What are some personal goals that you're working towards for yourself right now?
Well, first of all, I'm 61 years old. I'm retired at a successful career. I achieved that goal. I transitioned, which is my life goal. So that is truly, when I look back, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was able to do that. So I'm very happy with that. Now I just want to make, I don't know, I want to make the world a better place. I'm just one person, so I can make the world a little bit better. I can't change a whole lot of things, but I just want to be an agent of change for the positive for everybody, not just for my community, but for everybody. I have 3 kids and I have a grandchild, and I want to make the world a better place for them. And then all the kids of all my friends, and it's like, oh my gosh, they're growing up in this really difficult, real difficult time. So that is very important to me. I still haven't figured out exactly how to do it, but you know, in small ways, I'll try to do it. Now, as for community, this is probably my biggest driver at the moment is I'm an electrologist. It's permanent hair removal. Most of my clients are trans just because I kind of cater to that community. But if I was just to get a random job at a random shop, many of them would still be trans. But I got into that because there was such a lack of electrologists who were willing to do the pre-op necessary electrolysis, because this is another marginalization because they just didn't want to deal with that. And so I just wanted to be another person out there that was going to be able to do that for them, so they didn't have to wait months and months just to start the treatments, because the treatments will last over a year anyway. And the other thing I've done is when I price for my clients, like for the general public, I have market rates for my services. But I offer a huge, huge discount to all trans and gender nonconforming folks because we need it right now. We need a break. We need something. I want to make it more accessible. I want to, and I also want to share in that feeling of healing and feeling good about yourself and seeing the progress and seeing that joy on their face. It's indescribable, and it's better than the money I charge, honestly.
And do you mind sharing the name of your business just in case people are interested in looking you up?
Sure. It's Transcendent Electrolysis, and that's also transcendentelectrolysis.com, which is quite many characters to type. I apologize for that. I'm located in Oswego, Illinois, I do not think any trans or gender nonconforming people could find a better price than I give them. So,
well, thank you so much for doing that work for community. And so you've talked about how your own personal life goals, your relationships, and then what you are doing to serve community. But how can community serve you? What do you need from community, whether that is trans community, broaden that window, pride community, broaden that window more, our human community, our brethren? What do you need as a woman of trans experience from community?
Yeah, this is extremely important to me. In all of those views that you illustrated there, my trans community, I want to support them, and I need their support. I need just to compare and contrast, especially in these last 6 months. It's absolutely essential for my peace of mind and for my sanity, honestly. And that, you know, that goes both ways to all my friends, and that community is not doing well right now. But even if everybody's hurting, just being around, you know, my friends, just it's a really hard feeling to relay. But I mean, it's just just being around them and having understanding people hear you and you hearing them, even if you're talking about negative things, it's such a relief and such a building experience. And that goes also for just general pride communities, just queer spaces. Same exact thing, a little bit less intense. But I love to go to Pride Fest just because you walk in the gates and then I feel I can just walk up to anybody, start talking to them, make a new friend. Whereas I would feel reticent to kind of keep to myself, and if something developed, it would take a little bit more effort. Whereas things are just easier and natural, and honestly, so I described this to my friends also, that it's kind of like my batteries get drained by being in general society oftentimes, and I go to these pride events or queer spaces or just trans spaces, and I recharge my battery of my hopes and dreams, but my ability to go on, because I feel like coming, so I leave that event and I feel like, oh, I have my energy again, and I can now deal with the next week or two until, I'm drained again, and I need another shot of that. So I really rely on community. Now, talking about the general community, yeah, that is a little bit more difficult. Again, inside Illinois, not too bad, depending on where you are obviously. And I enjoy being out in the public. I enjoy it. I want to go and do things and see things just like anybody else would. And when I have a positive experience there, that's very rewarding to me. Even if, me being transgender had nothing to do with anything, just being able to do that, let's say go for a hike in a park or a forest preserve or something like that, and meeting other hikers and saying hi, and just interacting with the world is very important. And I get a lot out of that, and I think that's in some places that's really hard to do, and can be dangerous to do, honestly.
Yeah, and I love that, the asks for support and to just be unencumbered and be free, be yourself in space and be supported by individuals. So thank you so much for that share and that vulnerability. Is there anything else that you feel like we didn't cover for this podcast to talk about your experience as a trans woman and anything else that you think people maybe should know?
If for people who don't know me, I transitioned extremely late in life. I came out when I was 58. So that's a unique experience, believe me. So I don't know how relatable that is to anybody else. I mean, that might not be relatable to a trans teenager, but there might be an older trans person who has not come out that might get something out of that. I don't know. But that kind of makes that a little bit unique. I mean, I know several people who kind of are on the same trajectory. So I'm not like a unicorn in that sense. But let's see. Anything else about my experience? So I have a theory, and this is not unique about me, but I think most trans people share this, is most trans people have a lot of trauma in their life, mostly coping with, discovering themselves, the living one life and transitioning and becoming, your hopes and dreams, is very difficult. And so, yeah, it's just a life-changing, altering experience. And I urge anybody who's making a new trans friend is just to recognize, you know what? There's probably some trauma in their life as well, and I'm going to be mindful of that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for the beautiful shares and the acknowledgments to be better humans. And I think, you know, overall, you mentioned just being able to interact in the world. And that's essentially what we are doing with this podcast, I hope, is that we are co-creating community. We are reminding each other of our own humanity, despite and with our differences, that we can hold multiplicity as humans, and that our relationships are entangled. We move forward together, and that is the only way forward. And so we're not leaving anybody behind, including and especially our trans brethren. So thank you so much for all of those shares, Beverly. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
And thank you, listener, for tuning into our podcast, Beholden, with me, your host, Allison of Ignite Wellbeing, located in Naperville, Illinois. I am so thankful to have spent time with Beverly. I'm thankful for her vulnerabilities around her anxiety with being stared at, her challenge with being perceived as a threat, her needs from our community currently. I wish I had more time to speak with her. I would have asked her about some of the more meaningful aspects of her personhood. For instance, what it felt like to first hold her grandchild, what her hopes are for her children and her legacy, what are some of her favorite memories are from her own childhood, and perhaps what she looks forward to most as an older adult in the U.S. with or despite our current cultural climate. And I hope that this podcast in general leaves you willing to explore several considerations more broadly across this episode and future episodes. For instance, how did you show up to receive the words from Beverly? Was it with curiosity and an open heart? What did you learn from Beverly, and how might what you've learned change you? And expanding on these considerations for Beverly, as well as other interviewees or people in your own life, can you allow others to soften your heart and inspire you to extend care, curiosity, and kindness in new ways? What would happen if you were to acknowledge our interconnectedness, if you allowed others to seep into your worldview, if you were able to hold the tension and complexity of difference with awe instead of fear, with understanding that difference isn't invalidating, but it is the gift of another way of being in the world, and it is the foundation of resilience. At the very least, it's my hope that listening to this podcast offered you insight into yourself, others, the world, and that the podcast inspires you to offer more kindness to yourself and others. Because in the words of the late Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, we enter are, or in my words, we are beholden. With love and gratitude, deepest bow to you, listener.